Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show, a thought crime episode with Tyler, Blake, and Jack Posobiec. We discuss the 2024 election and the latest Kamala Harris strategy session. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show and get involved as becoming a member. It's members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Okay, everybody, it is Thought Crime Thursday. We are here with Blake. Do we have empty chair or Tyler?
We've got an empty chair right now, but we can still ask questions to it. Tyler, how you doing?
Can we just show the empty chair? There you go. That's great. And then the great news today, New York Times bestselling author Jack Posobiec. Jack, you have to now change your driver's license to New York Times bestselling author. It is now in your intro. It's in your bio. Jack, congratulations. That's a big deal. They'll never be able to take that away from you. You are in the 1% of the 1%. Of all authors. Tell us about how you were able to penetrate the New York Times Club.
Well, Charlie, I appreciate that. And so, look, it's just a testament to the book on humans, myself, Joshua Lysak, talking about the fact that we are going into and we are currently in and what we call an irregular communist revolution. And the fact of the content stands on its own. But, you know, really, I just have to thank so many people. J.D. Vance, of course, who blurbed the book. Tucker Carlson, who gave us a great platform. Donald Trump Jr., Lieutenant General Flynn. Robert Stacey McCain from the American Spectator. Charlie, you, of course, gave Joshua and myself a fantastic, like, hour and a half long interview just about the book itself. And really, I think it showed the movement coming together, but also this idea of a new way of looking at, you know, at what it is that we're up against. And the response was tremendous, as it was. So I will tell you, actually, that in the, without revealing too much, looking at the numbers and the fact that we hit Publishers Weekly number one on our first week out, we could actually see the book scan. Yeah, we actually, in the week we were released, we outsold every single book on the New York Times bestseller list. And yet we were not included on the New York Times bestseller list. And so there may have been some behind the scenes emailing and phone calling that went back and forth, and we were comparing data and we were looking at different things. And let's just say that I'm very glad that the New York Times decided to be on the right side of history and give the book its due, because it earned its place there. It earned it through hard work, doing things the right way. And I appreciate the fact that they were able to come to terms with that. Plus, by the way, huge shout out, not only J.D. Vance having blurred the book, but he also hit number one himself in his own right with Hillbilly Elegy, a book that came out, I think, 8 years ago when it was first published. But it is also number one. That just goes to show there's a huge interest in conservative books and a huge interest in specifically these types of stories, which the, you know, for lack of a better term, the new right, the new MAGA movement is putting out. And you're seeing that reflected in the numbers.
It's a huge deal, Jack. That is very hard. We did not make the bestseller list this summer, and you did. We did it back on MAGA Doctrine, and we did that whole push. Very, very hard to do that. Now, Jack, you would agree. There's a lot of gamification. We know the numbers should have penetrated. But you were able to do it. You were able to jump right into it, and that's a very big deal. Everyone check out On Humans. It is a phenomenal book. And the episode we also have up on the Charlie Kirk podcast page. Do we still have an empty chair, Blake?
We still got the empty chair, Charlie. We're monitoring the situation here. we're we're gazing at the chair right now. I can see through the back to the red light that kind of glows through the chair. It is, we've got, there are no butts now anywhere near it.
In Tyler's defense, he is hiring hundreds of ballot chasers right now, and he had a very good week getting rid of Stephen Richards, so he can come whenever he wants.
Charlie,
Blake, what?
Shut it down. We've got an update.
The big reveal.
We've got an update. We have a butt. We have an American flag shirt. It has the Bowyer has landed. It is in the chair. It is in the chair. Tyler, we were just talking about you. We were talking about how, you know, punctual you are.
Oh yeah,
how much missed you.
This is my problem.
We're pining for you.
They call this Mormon Standard Time. This is 15 minutes late.
You know, it seems every cultural ethnicity in America thinks that they have invented being late. You got Cuban Standard Time, you got Mormon Standard Time. Am I right, Jack? It's like every group.
Well, that's the inverse of the Protestant work ethic, right? So the WASP work ethic is you must be on time. If you're not on time, you're late. You know, if you're early, you're on time, etc. But all of the other, you know, the ethnic groups out there are, you know, looking at that and saying, yeah, no, we're not on board with that one. Which I can say because, by the way, the communities of color of the, I believe it was the Seattle and Portland area, have officially assigned the Slavic community to be considered a community of color. So as a proud and have always identified as a person of Polish descent, I, of course, can claim that I am on Slavic people time.
So, Tyler, we want you to lead our conversation here because it will segue into the Kamala stuff. But recap, Tyler, what happened with Stephen Richer, ballot chasing, and the primary this week in Arizona. It was major news. Walk us through what unfolded here in State 48.
Yeah, so I actually just got done. That's why I was late. We were on podcast with one of our ballot chasing managers who actually just won in city council here. And we were breaking down some of the numbers just from a general's perspective. The numbers are not yet in, Charlie, because they're still counting ballots across the state of Arizona. There was a law that was passed this last session that forced them to count through the night, but still there's people dragging their feet. So they're expecting that the final ballots will be counted this weekend, and about another 100,000 ballots. But there was a huge tectonic shift that happened in this primary, which, number one, a lot more Republicans showed up than Democrats to the primary. So that's number one. Number two, you had in Maricopa County, the guy that is the chief elections official, his name is Stephen Richer. We've covered him extensively. If we remember the onesies, twosies with Bill Gates and Stephen Richer. I don't know if we have a picture of him. He was the guy that oversaw the disastrous election results that happened in 2022. It was his first general election as the chief elections officer. And like half the polling places had issues in Maricopa County. Remember refreshing everybody's memory? That's the guy. So he was up for a re-election, and the internal polling had him up like 10 points. Yeah, that's him. There he is. There's the guy. Had him up 10 points in some of the internal polling. He ended up losing in a three-way race where another conservative actually split the vote. So this would have been an absolute total walloping had it just been a one-on-one between Justin and him. But Justin Heap, who is a Freedom Caucus member here in Arizona, he has 100% score on the Turning Point Action scorecard. He's a full patriot. Took him on, challenged him, and it was the biggest upset of the evening, which was that Justin Heap defeated Stephen Richer by a pretty decent margin. The last check was about 6 points, and so that was the late breaking news that happened here in Arizona this week. Why this matters so much is because Stephen Richer was the face of Lincoln Project style Republicans here, which are very few. They're really Democrats. The Democrats really didn't field a legit candidate because this was the Democrats' pick. So he got a lot of Democrat support, a lot of Democrat money in the primary, and still the grassroots was able to, with very minimal resources, was able to upset, spread the word, and defeat Stephen Richer. So that's a big deal for a couple of different reasons we can get into, but it definitely helps Trump through November here in Arizona.
So I think that's, first of all, congratulations, Tyler, and Turning Point Action. Tyler, can you give some idea, without any numbers, because we don't want to totally tell our enemy what we have here in Arizona ahead of November, but can you just give some idea of a ballpark scale of what we saw here on the ground in the primary and why that could be predictive heading into November?
Yeah, so our job, Charlie, was really simple. Was we wanted to use the primary as a practice ground with our ballot chasing army. And we have a lot of volunteers. We have a lot of full-time people that were chasing ballots and using this as practice, knowing that we weren't going to get absolutely everybody out. Primaries generally in most places in America have turnouts around 20%. That's an average primary. And I'm just giving a kind of a ballpark for most Americans just to have a good idea. A really exciting primary will sometimes have upwards of 30% turnout. That's a primary election in America. Most general elections usually are like 60, historically have been 60 to 70% it turned out. So that just gives you an idea. So it's usually less than half of who actually turns out in the general. We saw, Charlie, in some of our key target precincts, close to 50% turnout in this primary. We have some, we're still waiting for the data to come in, so we don't want to get overly excited. But I think we will have a couple of precincts at least that break that. I mean, we're talking like in some states, that's general election numbers for turnout for Republicans. And this is Republicans, right? So that tells you a couple different things. One, we have a really exciting year ahead of us. That's a good sign ahead of this general election. But two, the ballot chasing works. Ballot chasing works. We hear all the time. Charlie hears it all the time at freedom@charliekirk.com. You can't overcome the machines. You can't. You're going to lose. Just all this blackpilling type stuff on the election manipulation the Democrats participate in. And they're not wrong. There is tons of manipulation, not always the way that they describe it, but it's sometimes a little bit more in the weeds. But this election in particular, why I'm so excited about it, is if they could have done anything to save Stephen Richard, they would have. And they were unable to.
Mm-hmm.
They were unable to. So this is
the most important part. So I want to interject for a second here. The national news media was lamenting the defeat of Stephen Richard. So we agree our elections are flawed. But if they are flawed beyond repair or flawed beyond any chance of victory, they would have done Venezuela for Stephen Richard. Right, Tyler? They would have pulled out everything. What we were able to prove is that, yes, there are major issues. However, they are overcomable with good candidate, grassroots work, and grassroots hustle.
That's right, Charlie. And this is really critical for those that are listening at home in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, in places that where we've just been, in Michigan, where the election laws are absolutely horrendous, in Wisconsin, where there's so many of our grassroots that just don't trust the process, and rightfully so, that you can overcome things, you can win. Now, you got to keep in mind, anytime that you oust a incumbent, doesn't matter if it's ours or theirs, meaning on the more moderate side or the more conservative side, it makes it organically more difficult to win in the general. Doesn't matter who it is, because you have to be able to reintroduce this person to the entire society. And remember, majority of those people don't vote in a primary. So presidential year, you have everybody voting for the most part. You have to introduce these people. So it is really incumbent upon the Republican Party, on every major person, and I'll give Carrie Lake a lot of credit. She has been right there, right behind Justin Heap, saying his name to as many people, giving the full support. But you need Trump, you need the campaigns, you need the state parties, you need the local parties, all reintroducing this person and saying, this is the guy we totally trust. Otherwise, you run the risk of losing no matter who that is. That is true everywhere. So that's not unique to Arizona. That is true everywhere. And so a lot of people who consider themselves conservative, MAGA, you have to keep in mind that when we win, it's the game's not over today. This is the starting line. We have to work together to be able to reintroduce to the entire Republican Party who these people are.
So let me nationalize this. I believe that in a week where there's been some tough news items, this was the best news of the week, that what happened in Arizona showing that the strength of the grassroots, the turnout, that is a very strong prediction. By the way, Tyler will reinforce this. We have hundreds of thousands of registered Republicans that do not live here over the summer.
Yep.
They live in Illinois or Wisconsin or Indiana. So the state actually gets redder and redder the closer we get to November. Now, let me now talk about Kamala Harris here in regards to this. I think it's important. And then I want to go to you, Jack. So there is a fair amount of just doom looping that is happening because we grew so used to running up against a corpse, Joe Biden. Some people in the audience are not sure what's going on. The race looks like it's tightening, and it is. However, this is not the time to panic. In fact, some of the fundamentals are actually very healthy. Let me highlight three different data points. Number one, according to a very, very trusted poll, Donald Trump is up 10 points in Ohio. If that ends up materializing, that'll be 2 points better than 2020. Secondly, a University of North Florida poll, which is a great pollster, shows Donald Trump up 7 in Florida, which is 3.5 points better, nearly double the amount of margin of victory back in 2020. And finally, there's a series of polls. One showed that Kamala Harris is up in Arizona. That one's a little hard to believe, but another one showed that Donald Trump was up 5, another Trump up 6. The point I'm getting at here is that even though she is having a little bit of a honeymoon period, that we are stronger than we were in 2020 in Ohio, stronger than we were in 2020 in Florida. Now, mind you, those are not the swing states that will determine the entire election. Those are solidly red. However, it is important to understand that this is by no means a collapse. This is not a panic. This is a little bit of what we could call Democrats coming home. Against Joe Biden, only 72% of Democrats were voting for Joe Biden or comfortable with Joe Biden. Now, 91% of Democrats are voting for Kamala Harris, whereas 92% of Republicans are voting for Donald Trump. So what you have not seen is necessarily Kamala Harris winning over independents. She's simply bringing Democrats back home. That is how I view the state of the race. This is going to be an annoying August where Democrats are going to get a lot of positive headlines, VP rollout, Kamala Harris's convention, but we must continue to define the terms, who she is, what she stands for, how she's unlikable, how she is mean, how she is fake, how she is phony and radical. Jack Posobiec, your thoughts on the state of the race?
Look, I think there's a lot of blackpilling going on out there, but at the same time, keep in mind that it was the movement that you're seeing, the enthusiasm that you're seeing is all on the Democrat side. So this goes to show you that okay, guess what? We thought it was going to be this big blowout with Joe Biden on the ballot, and it probably was shaping up to be that way. It was Donald Trump versus a non-candidate. But people also have to realize that, and I think some people are, but I want to hear, and I was at the Trump rally last night in Harrisburg, and he spoke to this as well. He didn't talk about Kamala Harris very much. What he really focused on more was the system that we're up against. And he, of course, uses this line again and again with, they're not really after me, they're after you, I'm just in the way. So yes, I think he needs to frame the race as himself versus the system, that Kamala is just whatever current avatar of the system that they have. That's how you get centrists back on board. That's how you get these independents back on board, plus the enthusiastic base support that he's already got. Of course, we saw that in droves in Pennsylvania and in Harrisburg, and then driving up here to Butler, Pennsylvania, just flags and signs all over the place in Western Pennsylvania. And so there's no question. The key difference, I think, really is that what they're trying to push now is this new narrative candidate. And I really do think that there's a lot of definitional issues going on. J.D. Vance, by the way, has a great job of this. And I got to say that J.D. Vance fighting back against the narrative with his own narrative. What did he do today that we haven't seen him do yet on the trail? He put the flannel on. He was down at the border. He was walking around looking like a member of the muscular class. It was the inner hillbilly was coming out. I've said this on Twitter a couple of times, but you had hillbilly elegy. Now we need hillbilly energy. Actually embrace that, lean into it, show that J.D. Vance is a man of the people, show that J.D. Vance isn't just talking about the forgotten men and women. He literally is one of them. And talking about stories about how his, that when he was growing up and when his mother would take drugs or opioids, it was before the fentanyl crisis, and would take that, and he would be sitting there as a little boy holding his mom's hand, waiting for her to wake up. Those are the types of stories that you need need to be using. And I think it's fantastic that he's telling those stories. That's how you respond to a Kamala Harris. It's not necessarily by trying to refute her every point here or there, because she's not making any points. Her whole points are vote for me because of my identity. That's it. She's not pointing at anything she's done. She's not pointing at any record. But unfortunately, because of the chronic propaganda that's going on in this country for 40 to 50 years now, there are millions of Americans that will vote because of that. They'll vote just for the narrative. What J.D. Vance has started to do and is really doing writ large, leaning into hillbilly elegy and standing up for a group of people that have been largely forgotten, which, oh, by the way, and this speaks to the strategic importance of the pick, those groups of people are centralized in the exact states that Donald Trump needs to win in order to return to the White House.
Yeah, and the fundamentals are still good, and they're not going to change dramatically. Nope. People are not happy with the direction of the country. They can't afford groceries. They're upset about the border. No matter how much Kamala propaganda that there is, that is not going to change. This is J.D. Vance with that hillbilly energy. J.D. Vance has had a great couple of days, and he's been treated very, very unfairly. We should get into the whole J.D. Vance thing, because he is the pro-family candidate. If you want to have a family, if you have a strong family and you believe in strong families, J.D. Vance is your guy. The Democrats do not believe in families, and they never have. This is a wonderful clip. Play cut 136.
The former president's comments yesterday to the National Association of Black Journalists, where he said that Vice President Harris is, quote, all of a sudden black. As a father of three biracial children, did those comments give you pause at all?
They don't give me pause at all. Look, all he said is that Kamala Harris is a chameleon. She goes to Georgia 2 days ago. She was raised in Canada. She puts on a fake Southern accent. She is everything to everybody, and she pretends to be somebody different depending on which audience she's in front of. I think it's totally reasonable for the president to call that out, and that's all he did. I mean, look, she's running as a tough-on-crime prosecutor, even though she implemented open-border policy. She's saying that she wants to support the police, yet she wanted to defund the police just 3 years ago. It's totally reasonable to call out the fact that she pretends to be somebody different depending on the audience she's talking to.
Blake, your thoughts on this, on not just the J.D. Vance take, but the state of the race.
All right, finally. I wasn't here last week, Charlie. I didn't get to talk about Kamala. I have a lot to say about Kamala. I feel like I am going insane. Like, I am becoming a crazy person over the last 2 weeks. Like, from the amount of whiplash, from the amount of, I apologize for using this word, but gaslighting of me about Kamala by the press, by the internet. And you know me, I like to fuss where I'll be like, well, what about this thing, Charlie, that happened 2 years ago? But it's really bad with Kamala. Like, she ran in 2019. I remember this. You remember this. A lot of people remember it. Like, she ran for president. She got 15% off one of these media, you know, force memes like this, where they just talk about how great she is and they talk about her a lot. And they got her up to, you know, 15, 16%. She was polling, I think she topped out in second place behind Biden in 2019. She's in that debate where she says that Joe Biden, you know, came onto her school bus to grab her and say, like, you can't go to the school with white children. And he, like, dragged her off to the segregated school. That was, you know, this whole bit she did. And, you know, that little girl was me. And it was probably made up, at least in the details of how she described it. And so they really pushed her, and then she fell apart. She fell apart because her campaign was badly run. It was badly managed its money. Staff were unhappy and miserable, and it was basically a total disaster. And the reason she got picked as vice president was not because of any special quality she had. It was because Biden had to cut a deal to win South Carolina, and it appears that that deal was basically you will choose an African-American as your vice president, and he wanted to pick a woman for vice president. So right down there, you're down to 5% of the population, 5-6% of the population is eligible for the vice presidential pick. And there were basically three or four people on the short list. And we just throw that all away.
You know, there's a hilarious story. I'll go back to you in a sec, Blake. But you know, there's a hilarious story there. So Joe Biden makes this pledge privately with Jim Clyburn, who basically runs South Carolina. And Jim Clyburn says, okay, you have to say in the debate that you're going to pick a black running mate. And Joe Biden's like, you got it. And it's like 3/4 of the debate, and Joe Biden forgot to say it. And so there's like that like 90-second intermission where they say, we'll be right back after a commercial break. And Jim Clyburn literally gets up out of the stands, out of the seats, and goes onto the stage. And everyone's like, what is Jim Clyburn doing? He just like bulldozes through people, goes right up to Joe Biden, and literally is like, you need to mention the fact you're going to put a black person on the ticket. It's like, oh, that's right. It's a true story. I'm telling you, it is a true story. And he's like, I totally forgot. And then he like mentions it like right. If you can go look at and the tape, you could pull the tape like right after the commercial break. Like, Mr. Biden, going back to you, what is your stance on the Green New Deal? And he says, that's why I'll put a black person as my running mate. It's one of the greatest stories where Jim Clyburn basically just starts climbing over people. All right. So, Blake, continue. Sorry. Yeah, it's a funny little
side. That's an amazing
story. Note.
I can't believe I hadn't heard that. But that's amazing.
I've never heard that story before. That's an incredible story.
I've got to go look up that.
We need to pull that clip.
That's amazing. If we can find a clip, that's incredible. But so, yeah, that's all preface to say. So she has a disastrous campaign. She has a disastrous vice presidency. And this isn't the New York Post. This isn't the National Review. This isn't Breitbart reporting this. Like, the New York Times and Washington Post are putting out articles where they're just ponderously going, yeah, you know, Kamala has struggled to define her role in this administration. And then you dig into the details, and it's that everything that's given her as a portfolio is a total disaster. She can't handle it. She does some cringe video. Looks like a mess. She can't keep any of her staff. They're all miserable. They all quit. They're all unhappy. And just total disaster zone, which, like, no one thinks that if you had an open primary for the Democrat nomination that Kamala would have won it. No one was, like, excited to have her take over after Joe Biden. Nobody was thinking Kamala was the natural heir apparent. And basically, they go with her because they're desperate, and they think if we have an open primary, it'll rip the party apart and we'll lose. And we're just suddenly chucking all of this, just mass hallucination, where we're suddenly going like, Kamala is brat. Kamala's great. Kamala is definitely qualified for this office. Kamala definitely is not just one disastrous, like, you know, Peter Principle promotion. Like, she just fails and gets promoted over and over again. And that's not even getting into the stuff where, like, people aren't bringing it up because they're worried it'll just be received badly or sound wrong. Like, it is 100% objectively true that Kamala got a job paying her $150,000 a year to attend two meetings a month paid for by California taxpayers because her boyfriend, who was married and 30 years older than her, just gave it to her. And you can find California newspapers saying, oh, it's really remarkable how Kamala was given this job she's not qualified for. She's the companion of Willie Brown and, you know, patronage, California. That's how it works. That's her entire career. And we're just throwing this all out. And we're like, oh, yeah, it makes perfect sense to run this person for president.
Quick, just while you're on that note, it seems like there's so many conservatives that are kind of falling for it, though. Have you noticed this? That, you know, in your view of the whole situation, in your self-imposed exile last week, that it seems like a lot of conservatives and like right or right adjacent commentators are just going along with it.
They really are. I think I saw this repeatedly that, you know, it was like they're saying don't touch certain parts of Kamala's history. And I agree, it's tough. There are ways it can go astray. But I do think with Trump, everyone he's gone against, there's almost been one of his strengths is he finds that fatal flaw with a person and he picks at it over and over again. So with Hillary, it was crooked Hillary. She's the swamp personified. She's obviously dealing influence for money. Clinton Foundation's a giant grift. With Jeb Bush, that fatal flaw was Jeb Bush really didn't want to be president. He was kind of running out of obligation. He just represented this machine and he was the next man up and no one really wanted this guy and he didn't want it. With Governor DeSantis, frankly, it was, you know, he's kind of a dork. And Trump really hit at that. He can do that to Republicans as well as Democrats. With Kamala, I think the fatal flaw is she's fake. She is a scam. Everything you are being told about her is like the ad campaign for a bad movie or a bad TV show. I think I saw on Twitter someone joked that Kamala Harris is like one of those Star Wars spinoff shows that gets a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, but then the audience reviews are 30% positive. It's a lot like that. We're having all these people come out and pretending that Kamala's amazing when we have literally decades of evidence of people on Kamala's own side believing, no, Kamala is not amazing. She's dumb. She has no principles. She's not really qualified for all of the like jobs that she is given. She's not good at running organizations. She doesn't inspire loyalty. Like, look at Trump. There are people who have worked for Trump for decades on end who say great things about Trump. There's tons of great stories about how Trump gets along great with, you know, his caddies, with waiters. He's a generous tipper. Like, there's a lot of people who have these warm interactions with Trump throughout his life. And there's like none of that for
right.
Kamala. People hate Kamala.
So which goes to my idea, which I am pushing privately and publicly. And I've told the entire team, and I got to call Trump about this and give him my opinion, which I don't care. I don't care if it's my idea or not. Do you guys all agree? Yes, debate, town hall format, the best for Trump to be able to interact and contrast with Kamala Harris. Does everyone agree that that is the best venue for him to be able to succeed in that format and potentially even gain votes?
I definitely think so. I think you need Kamala. She can definitely do a canned line. She did it in the debates in 2019, where she basically, you know, she got her 60 seconds to go blast Joe Biden, and the press probably tipped off. This is what she would say beforehand. We're all there to say, like, oh, Kamala made a strong showing in this debate. But if you can muddle that even a bit, if you do a town hall where the questions are, you know, they're phrased a bit weirdly because it's an ordinary person, or you just, you put her in a situation where she has to think on her feet and she cannot get away with recite a 60-second bit that she memorized beforehand, it goes badly. When she had that okay showing in the first Democrat debate, everyone after that, she was a mess because other Democrats would take shots at her and she couldn't handle it. When she has to think on her feet as vice president, she starts talking in baby talk. That's another thing they're just memory-holing, that she goes on a radio show, they ask her about Ukraine, and she describes Ukraine and Russia like the audience are literally in second grade. And
she does that repeatedly. She is not good. This is something I've always defended Kamala Harris on, and I know that it's like, wait, what? No, but let me explain. So when she says Ukraine and Russia, like Ukraine's a small country and Russia's a big country, like obviously that's very silly and childish, but there's something else that's more to the point. She's right about that. This has actually become a huge issue in the Ukraine war because Russia just has more resources to bring to bear. And they're like, oh, well, Russia's losing soldiers and Russia's doing this, doing that. And it's like, yeah, but Ukraine lost their entire army. So it's actually something where it's like she was kind of right, but for the completely wrong reasons. And yet all of the experts are completely wrong also for the wrong reasons.
I'll say this. It's kind of interesting. I think that, I'll add kind of context to what Jack is saying. I'm a big believer in speaking simple, you know, in politics. It's just, I think the Republican Party got so into this whole like Koch era, like every state needs to have these think tanks and we need to talk like we're like Stephen Moore at every dinner table, and like everybody hates that. And there's, and I get your point that just like she's so obnoxiously stupid and silly and really has no idea what she's talking about. But I think more people take away from Kamala Harris that listen to her of like, oh, she's relatable and I understand what she's saying and all of these things, right? And like, and again, I think this is part of the virtue of Donald Trump too, is that our side, especially the, you know, the regular man listens to Donald Trump, they go, oh, I get what he's saying. I get what he's talking about. And unfortunately for America, Kamala's baby talk, simplistic, overtones that she has with every single issue that's brought to her as vice president of the United States of America, a heartbeat away from the presidency. She probably should be the president right now because who knows what Joe Biden's doing in real life. But this is something that works, unfortunately, with most of America.
Oh man.
And you know that's true. Yeah, but you know it's true.
Right, we're so doomed. We're just going to have baby talk president and she'll have 70% approval and they'll just be like,
hold on. I want to say though that there's a place for sophisticated language. I think part of Vivek's appeal was that he would use bigger words and increased vocabulary. I think it's actually how you present it. If you talk really, really fast, like Vivek does or Ben Shapiro does, or at times I do, I think that anybody can be appealing to that because it almost kind of becomes a performance sport. But if you talk really slow with big words, people just kind of lose you. They're like, what are you saying? You're using
it's like lead guitar. Like, it's like not everybody can play guitar, but if you can play guitar slowly, people are like, okay, fine, whatever. You're in a bar or something. But if you're like Steve Vai up there, or, you know, Kirk Hammett going at it, or Billy Corgan or something, suddenly people are like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Even if, you know, it's totally beyond their ken.
Well, I'll kind of add this. This is part of the whole turning point appeal, which is like, again, I think of it in terms of the conservative movement. Think tank language, like Charlie said, has a place. The place just happens to not be in like presidential elections, unfortunately. I think it has more appeal in a primary setting where you have, you know, probably mm-hmm. more aware and interested folks
engaged.
I actually think that this is the scary point to what you're bringing up. Kamala's a more dangerous general candidate than she is a primary candidate.
It could be true. I do think, I hope, this is really just hope, I should say. I think you can be more simple, more direct, if it helps that the sense is that you're being honest and maybe being serious. That's really what stands out about Trump. Trump kind of, he had this power starting all the way back in 2015 that he could cut through BS. And that was the directness of Trump that was appealing. He'd come down the escalator and he'd come out and say, all the stuff they're saying is complex about the border. That's all crap. It's a bunch of criminals and rapists and drug dealers and murderers are crossing the border. Send them back, build a wall. And that's straightforward. And it's not straightforward in a I'm talking to a baby sort of sense. It's straightforward in the sense of this is a clear moral issue. Yeah. This is a clear policy issue. America's interest is clear, so you don't need to make it all nuanced. Same thing with the wars. He would say Iraq is a disaster. The wars are a disaster. We're going to cut them out. I feel like with Kamala, she doesn't do that, at least in the, you know, the clips that go viral for us. It's like simple in the sense of she's doing a rehearsed politician bit, yeah, and she's not good at it. So she has to do like the I'm a fifth grader playing a vice president.
Yeah.
Except now she actually is running and we're going to be punished with this because we are a sinful nation.
So let me just say one thing about this has been memory hold. It's so hard to find. By the way, I will give $100. OK, you hear that, Ryan? No, $250. I've spent hours looking for this. And I'm sure you guys have had this experience. This was back in 2016 where, and it has been totally memory hold, of this PhD who studies language. What would be called? An entomologist, Blake?
Someone linguist?
Who studies what?
Like studies language, you said?
Yeah, not a linguist. No, it's someone who studies the roots of words and where they come from. I think that's an entomologist. Anyway. So etymology.
Etymology.
Anyway,
Yes.
Okay. So it could be a mixture between a linguist and an entomologist. Anyway, so he was a PhD, and this was back in August of 2016. And he basically went on some show and he said, Donald Trump's going to win the presidency. And everyone, the host was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I study language for a living and let me show you why. And it was this amazing 5-minute video where he just took a random Donald Trump interview. And he says he does not use words that are more than 2 syllables unless he absolutely has to. And the way he talks in the choppy manner is so digestible and it resonates with people in such a way. He said, this is 40 years of somebody that has studied himself on TV and that has made his speech patterns in the highest impactful way that a human being possibly can. And he said, this has been trained into him for 40 years. And for example, he'll just say, and the war in Iraq was a mess. It was a mess. It was terrible. It was awful. I mean, it's very precise language, hard punching. I wish I could find that video. It's so powerful.
I remember the video.
And he accurately said that he was able to talk to the common man.
I
do you know what I'm talking about, Jack? Yeah. I can't find it.
It went viral in 2016 a couple times. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it did. And he broke it down from the actual, he has like an equation where he's like, if it's more than XYZ syllables over 500 words, you're going to lose the audience. If it's less than XYZ syllables, then you're able to maintain the audience. And he has this equation, and Donald Trump got like the highest or lowest score, as you will. And he says, usually the people who get low scores are considered to be dumb, but in presidential politics, this is actually how you win.
Yeah. And that's why I think Kamala is so dangerous in a general, is because her simplistic nature actually is a huge asset, especially because she's basically like a Manchurian candidate. So, I mean, they can literally just stick her out just for simple things, say things in very scripted format, and then hide her. And this is like this is what they do. This is like the Katie Hobbs thing. Like, Katie Hobbs never came out of her hole except for very few things. Here in Arizona, we have a few other examples of this where it's like, when they don't trust you, they won't stick you out. That is actually the biggest, best defense against Donald Trump that the Democrats could play. That is the game that they play. We know they're playing this. So to that point, like, we got to try to force her to come out and talk more, because the more she talks, to Charlie's point, is like, the more she's going to lose people and the more people are going to resonate with Donald Trump. But this is like, this week is a perfect example, is Donald Trump is out going long form in things, which is not his strong suit, right? And we're talking about like this interview that happened this week. And it's like, I'm not bothered by it. I think it's funny. I think it's hilarious. There's so many good clips. But the average American is only reading the short quip headlines and the sound bites that they chop up. It is really hard to sound bite a lot of what Donald Trump does, is because of what Charlie is talking about right now, what he's referencing.
Yeah. One thing I like to point out with Trump is they'll say, like, people say he's like dumb or whatever. And actually, if you look at sometimes even when his language is confusing, it's because it's almost, it's like overloaded with ideas that he's struggling to like efficiently put out. One that stood out to me even yesterday was when he was at the Black Journalist event, is they made a quip about like the vice presidency and why the pick matters. And he kind of just says in passing, he's like, yeah, you know, one of the things about the vice president pick is it doesn't matter for the race as much as people think it does. So, you know, kind of saying you pick him for the actual successor thing, not just to win states. And he's like, and, you know, in the past, it hasn't mattered much, except, you know, for LBJ, who it mattered, but for a political reason, not an electoral one. And so, like, what he's actually saying there, and he doesn't elaborate on this, and you have to be a nerd to even notice it, but he's basically saying picking LBJ mattered because he helped JFK steal the election in Texas in 1960, which is this stray fact Donald Trump happens to remember and know about that he probably learned decades ago. Maybe someone, he read the Caro book or someone summarized it to him, or he just remembers the election. And he just like sort of alludes to this in passing. 99% of the people are just going to think he's being confusing, but that's clearly what he's actually referencing. He's like overloaded with ideas, and that's why he can be so effective, just going for hours on end. That's why he can actually sometimes be, he can just talk for 2 hours and it'll almost be tedious because he's got so much stuff he can recall. He doesn't need the notes, doesn't need a teleprompter. He can just go. Andrew says, even when Trump is telling a fib, he's actually telling the truth in like a very deep way. It's
this is the thing, is that Trump tells macro truths, which is why they hate him. Okay. Mm-hmm. The macro truths of Donald Trump are, what is this NATO thing and why is it here? Mm-hmm. That's like, you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed. What was the Scott Adams quote about Donald Trump's?
He talks about like directional accuracy, like directionally accurate. So it's the idea that he also has a quote. I think where he says, I know what you're talking about. He says, Democrats take him literally, conservatives understand him figuratively. You know, something along those lines, where he's saying that people know that he doesn't actually mean there's hundreds of millions of illegals spilling over. He's painting a picture. And then they'll go, well, actually, it was 25 million, not hundreds of millions or something like this. But people understand that he's using language as a metaphor. He's using it to paint pictures. He's a very visual speaker. And they'll nitpick little things that he's made like that, you know, billions and billions or something like this over and over. But he's doing so to draw your attention to the fact that something is much larger than it should be. And it's always far more directionally accurate than when you're hearing someone try to piece apart those little things. And then also, to your point of what you were saying earlier, that this is why Donald Trump's resonance with voters is much stronger than, say, Paul Ryan, when he was running around with his bow tie and his PowerPoint talking about why he was going to to cut everyone's entitlement programs because they can understand what Trump is saying better. And it all, it has that emotional resonance with them because it's stuff that they've been wondering themselves or stuff they've been thinking about, filling in the gaps of things that they try to understand. It's also one of the reasons why, by the way, and I've said this forever, that when you're listening to Donald Trump, especially listening and watching, that you can understand him so much better because 90% of communication is nonverbal than when you're just reading a transcript. This is what they'll do this with everything, with the Charlottesville hoax, with the drinking bleach hoax. They'll show you the transcript and they'll say, oh, here's the transcript, but you know, like pieces of it will be omitted. But then if you look at him in public, or if he's telling a joke or being sarcastic, which he's done so many times, you can tell from all of the nonverbal body cues that he's giving that obviously he's intending something as a joke, or obviously he's being sarcastic, or he's making a face or something like this. And of course, that doesn't transfer over into direct text. And so if you're just reading a transcript of it, then you're losing 90% basically of what was going on.
I want to play this piece of tape here. Kamala Harris, who has yet to do a press conference, take a single question since being the nominee, since Biden has been forced off the ballot. This is a huge attack vector. But I just want us all to acknowledge that Donald Trump has changed the way that we all communicate. Can we all agree at this in our public speaking, Jack? I mean, we all now have a little bit of Trumpian aspect of how we do, like from the body language.
Someone,
right?
I know someone said that he started talking like Trump at the office place and got promoted like twice as fast than he would have.
Oh, no, because it's alpha power moves. And what I would love to actually ask Donald Trump once he becomes president and say, so is this something that someone taught you or that you coached yourself through a series of self-examination?
You know that he grew up going to Norman Vincent Peale.
I'd be fascinated from a public speaking standpoint.
Norman Vincent Peale.
To who?
The preacher. That he actually, his dad used to actually take him
I didn't know that.
Norman Vincent Peale. I'm trying to look it up. He had a church in New York that his father, Fred, would take him to like all the time.
I think part of the Trump, that would be interesting. I think part of it's the New York, part of it's probably, I mean, just being around so many people. I think also just in real estate and doing deals and things like that. I think when you talk about a person like him, he's very much, and Charlie has seen this in real time too, up close, is he's the kind of guy where he wants to get to points very quickly. He wants to get to the point. And in so much that like there'll be a conflict, and instead of just discussing the conflict for minutes or hours with people, he'll just be like, "Get this other person on the line, or get the other person in here, and let's get right to it." But that's a very common Trump thing, and that to me that is something that is like really adjacent to how he talks, which is like it's just like he just wants to get to points. He doesn't have time for this stuff. He wants to get down to it, and that's how kind of. What makes him who he is, and he reaffirms everything, because when you're again talking with people, sometimes in large groups you get circular, you forget, and so he reaffirms everything. He says it four different ways, four different times, makes it as simple as possible, and gets right to the point.
I'm now just imagining a pastor talking in full Trump mode, so just like Jesus, he had the biggest assemblies. They fed over 5,000 people with just a few loaves and a few fish, and they filled, what was it, 9 wicker baskets afterwards? They filled so many wicker baskets. The entire Trump Hotel, all the taco bowls could have been made with just the leftovers from when they fed the 5,000. Just going on like that for ages, and I like to imagine this existing. But you are right. Yeah, he's totally infected the way everyone talks. Just think of the number of even just stray phrases that are Trumpisms, just saying sad in response to things. That's a Trump thing. Many such cases, Trump thing.
That's right. You're telling me for the first time, which might be one of the greatest Trump moments and underrated. Yes. I think it's one of the most underrated Trump moments ever, where he could have like gotten blown out in 2020 if he messed this up. And he comes off of a rally. It was a total setup, right? And you're telling me for the first time. She was a wonderful person. Like right there, it's like, all right, make or break. You screw this up. We would not have gotten a Supreme Court seat if Donald Trump would have just been like, oh, really? Wow, she was awful. You know, so it could have been like, no, it was perfect. All right. So Kamala Harris refuses to take questions. This is a growing issue here. Let's play cut 138.
Thank you all. Madam President, will you be meeting
least she didn't trip.
Charlie, you're telling me she hasn't taken one question since she became the presumptive nominee?
Not an interview, not a question, not a remark, nothing. Since she has taken over, not a single vote, she has not taken a question. Meanwhile, Donald Trump goes up against the most vicious people that you could possibly imagine at the National Association of Black Journalists. Jack, I think we need to emphasize this and force Kamala Harris into the press conference. They're trying to do the basement strategy, but you know what's not going to work? She's the sitting vice president of the United States. That's not going to work, Kamala Harris. There's no basement strategy. You have duties and responsibilities right now. Right now. Jack, I think this,
obviously something where, of course, when we have all those reporters reaching out to us saying, oh, what did you mean by this? Or, you know, we're watching Thought Crimes like they do every week and say, what did you mean by this segment, by that segment? Okay, well, we'll ask you this. Why are you so worried about what Charlie Kirk and Jack Posobiec are saying on podcasts, and yet you're not spending any time with just an ounce of curiosity what the sitting vice president, who is effectively, as far as we know, running the White House at this point, is doing on a day-to-day basis, and not answering any questions from the media after being handed the nomination on a silver platter. That's journalistic integrity. That's something where, by the way, if you're ever dealing with one of these organizations, that's what you always have to call into question. Don't say they're not being fair, saying they're not being journalists. And if you can call into question whether or not they're being journalists and actually show them something that they are doing on one side and not on the other. And I'm not saying just one of those like, oh, you're being mean to Trump. No. I mean, you haven't asked a single question. That's something that you can put over with the American people. That's something you can explain to anybody on the street and say, wow, isn't it kind of weird that she just got the nomination without anybody voting for her? They threw out the primary and the media won't ask them a simple question. Why is that? Why are they doing that? Why won't they ask any questions? And eventually you'll get somebody like a Jake Tapper, who's so vainglorious, has such high self-esteem, just believes, worships himself. You get somebody like that and suddenly it's going to get under their skin. It's going to get under their skin to the point where they're going to have to make it happen.
Yeah, and this is probably the number one reason why I support, even though this completely screws up the whole Trump 47 stitching on everybody's hats.
Yeah.
I totally support, you know, forcing Kamala into the presidency, because this that would for sure, I am deathly afraid they're going to pull what they did in 2020 with Joe Biden, right? And they're going to find every excuse in the book. Yeah, you know, we don't have that much time left. We only have 7 weeks here, right? Until early ballots are out in most states. They can run out the clock for 7 weeks for sure, guys. And so the only way that they can't is if she is forcibly put into the presidency. That would be the only way. And that's the scary part, is we don't know where Joe Biden, how he's actually doing right now. We really don't.
Well, so they would have been smart, to be honest. Like, they would have been smart to have her do some really, like, easy sit-down interviews.
Yep.
And just get it over with. They are now broadcasting how insecure they are about her. This has now gotten to the place where we are going on 2 weeks where she has not taken a question. She has not done an interview. They are now broadcasting, oh, they're very afraid of her ability to have dialogue and discourse. And, all right, they now showed us their weakness. We must force her into the public light.
I just brought Doug this up because I remembered reading this. So this is from 2019, and it was a dad whose son worked in an unpaid internship for Kamala Harris. And I guess it didn't go well, because it went bad enough that the dad wrote an op-ed for The Union, which appears to be some local paper in California. And he says, 4 short episodes I would like to share of his month-long internship for Kamala Harris. 1. Senator Harris vocally throws around F-bombs and other profanity constantly in her berating of staff and others. The staff is in complete fear of her, and she uses her profanity throughout the day. 2. As Attorney General, Senator Harris instructed her entire staff to stand every morning as she entered the office and say, "Good morning, General." He also says, never once during the month-long internship did Harris introduce herself to the son, and he was in a staff of 20 paid employees, like a Senate office. I will say, I interned in the Senate. I was introduced to the senator that I worked for, and he knew my name. So, props to him. And then the only acknowledgement was a form letter of thanks. And then this is great. Gregory, the son, was also given instructions to never address Harris nor look her in the eye, as that privilege was only allowed to senior staff members.
What?
That might be, maybe that's like exaggeration. Like they're basically saying don't bother her, and maybe that came through as like don't look her in the eye. So
well,
like,
hold
I
on,
can see that
just
being exaggerated.
Let me hear me out here. Ryan, can you get this latest tape here of her coming out of the car? Now, I might be nitpicking here, but I don't think I am. And I just, this is Kamala Harris coming out of the car, and just the way that she hands her phone to the staffer. Can we get this up on screen as the B-roll, where she just kind of like flippantly throws the phone to just quote unquote the help, you know, doesn't even say, you know, thank you or looked at the person in the eye. Again, I've kind of probably done this body gesture before, but she comes out as if she's the king, the queen of the world. And she doesn't take a single question. She doesn't take a single response from the media, none whatsoever. And again, I might be over like thinking this, but she just kind of just throws it there. Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much. And look, this plays into this narrative where you're like, did I hear you right? You're not allowed to look her in the eye.
That was what this op-ed said. Gregory was given instructions to never address Harris nor look her in the eye, as that privilege was only allowed to senior staff members. Now, I can understand some reasons for that. I wasn't allowed to refer to Charlie by name until I'd worked here for at least 8 months. And then you had to take a test.
Yeah. It was Mr. Kirk, right? Yeah.
Just kidding, of course.
No,
we
totally hazed you. I remember you looked in Charlie's. It wasn't looking him in the eye. It was looking in his direction.
Yeah. It was like, you know, the ancient Hawaiian. It was like the ancient Hawaiian kings. If your shadow fell on his shadow, you broke the taboo and had to be executed.
And then you had to go outside, take off your shirt, and we gave you 18 lashings.
Yes. Yeah. Welcome to Arizona.
That's right. Well, so let's summarize this all together here. I thought this was actually terrific. I think this is President Trump at his best, mocking and humiliating Kamala Harris, how insincere and fake she is. Let's play cut 1-8.
Because everything about Kamala Harris rollout, it's phony and it's fake. Did you see when President Obama and Michelle called? Did you see? Hello? Hello? Yes. Who is this? Oh, this is Michelle and Barack. Oh. So surprised to hear. They got 4 cameras in front. Oh, I'm so surprised. It's on speakerphone. Listen, we just want to congratulate you on destroying Joe Biden. I mean, on the winning the... Hey, is Joe Biden going to... Was that the phoniest phone call you've ever seen? How do you think, Dan? What do you think? Dan Muser, great congressman. What do you think? Was that a phony phone call? You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't get away. In your district, you wouldn't get away with it, would you?
She's fake.
And do we actually have the tape of that call?
I believe we do. Let me check.
Yeah, Kamala strikes me as... Have you guys ever watched the movie... Terrible Bosses, is that what it's called?
Horrible Bosses.
I actually finished it. Yeah, kind of like... She does kind of remind me of that, like, that character, that, like, that type of character where it's just like, and everybody's worked for a bad boss, just doesn't care about you that much, you know, is, you know, just you're kind of in and out, all that. It's associated with it. The hard part about her, and this is politics in general, is that there are some people involved in politics that are exactly like Kamala, have no reason to get where they get to. They're not really genuinely highly regarded people, but they just kind of just fail their way up. We talk about that all the time in politics, and that's truly who she is. She has just like failed upwards her entire career because of it's just convenience, I think, mostly. And adjacency to a lot of
convenience,
people.
Convenience, and she hits like she's been there to hit the demographic checkbox.
She checks his box.
They're like,
exactly.
We got to replace Barbara Boxer. Let's get a diverse candidate. Who's around? Oh well,
the AG. Controllable. Yeah. That's controllable.
All right, so let's play cut 140. She's trying to be like this girl boss. This is so nauseating. It's just I think this is repulsive. The way that she's like faking the whole thing. You got 4 cameras there. She doesn't even know how to hold up a phone for speakerphone. Play cut 140.
Kamala.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey there.
Oh, hi. You're both together. Oh, it's good to hear you both.
I can't have this phone call not without being together? Saying to my girl Kamala, I am proud of you. This is going to be historic.
We called to say Michelle and I couldn't be prouder to endorse you and to do everything we can to get you through this election and into the Oval Office.
Oh, my goodness. Michelle, Barack, this means so much to me. I am looking forward to doing this with the two of you, Doug and I both, and getting out there, being on the road.
So
but
fake.
Most of all, I just want to tell you the words you have spoken and the friendship that you have given over all these years mean more than I can express.
The
so
sad thing...
Both. Means so much, and we're gonna have some fun with this too, aren't we?
The viral reaction just makes me think of how on YouTube there and Facebook and stuff, there's a whole subgenre of these like those kind of fake videos where it'll be like Karen is racist and then gets owned right away, and it's like all clearly fictional. Have you seen these? Like,
yeah,
there are these basic morality plays.
Yeah,
and there will be all these comments from people who seem to think that this is real. That
or like, people will be like, this is fake, and it's like, well, it's obviously fake.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And it, this makes me think of that. Like, this is a transparently fake scene that was like shot for the cameras for the campaign, and then people are looking like, wow, so amazing how there's this warmth between Kamala and the Obamas. I like Obama. He was tall. He was a great president. So, like, this could work, and if it works, I'll just want to die. I'll just want to crawl into a hole and I don't know, eat a bunch of caramel popcorn or something. And then, ugh, just what a country. But it hasn't
happened
yet.
Do you not like caramel popcorn?
No, caramel popcorn is great. But if I eat too much of it, I'll look like Charlie pre-PhD weight loss. And, you know, we don't want that. So
that's true. And if we lose, who knows? I'd have to go back on PhD weight loss. It could be really bad. It could be really bad. All right, closing thoughts, guys. Jack stated, I mean, we were going to do all these other topics, but the race is just, you know,
no, this is
so hot right now. Final thoughts, Jack.
Yeah, two things. First thing, we can't, in general, let the Trump assassination go. We can't let that happen. We can't let that... the media define our narratives. We need to do that. That's why I'm here in Butler, Pennsylvania. We're actually talking about potentially even doing another book this year on this very topic, which is kind of insane to do two books in 1 year, but why not? And as far as fake Kamala, fake Kamala, you know, all I have to say is, Kama chameleon, do-do-do-do, you come and go.
Yeah, let's go. It's great, Jack. So I want to tell you guys about if you have liver problems. In these challenging times, it's more important than ever to prioritize our health and the health of our loved ones. But there's a hidden threat that quietly is affecting millions of hardworking folks like you, a sluggish and overworked liver. Just how our traditional values are under attack, your liver is under constant assault by GMOs, microplastics, toxins, fluoride, and all of the stuff that you might not even know about. It's time you take action. That's where Pure Health Formula Research comes in with their groundbreaking supplement, Liver Health Formula. The natural ingredients and nutrients in this formula are designed to support your liver's natural detoxification processes, from head-to-toe revitalization, shed unwanted pounds, and maintain an enjoyable, active lifestyle. Liver Health Formula is made using the highest quality, carefully selected ingredients. It has 11 powerfully, clinically proven ingredients to detoxify and rejuvenate your liver at the cellular level. As a special offer for my listeners, you can try Liver Health Formula and get a free 1 month supply of the nano-powered omega-3 to support your heart health as well. This is an exclusive offer for my audience. Go to liverhelp.com/Charlie now to claim your exclusive gift and take a proactive step towards a healthier, more vibrant you. That is liverhelp.com/Kirk. That is liverhelp. Getliverhelp.com/Kirk. Getliverhelp.com/Kirk. Tyler, final thoughts.
Yeah, if I was a member of the media, I would be so embarrassed of myself and my profession that my entire workplace hasn't asked Kamala a single question since she's got in. And that, to me, would make me want to quit, like learn to code, do something different, something more productive with society. Because if you can't ask the nominee for one of the two major parties a single question before for vetting before they go to the convention, like, what's the point of even having journalists?
And speaking of, she has like 92% staff turnover and always has. We got every single tell-all from, like, we're getting people who are J.D. Vance's high, like, college classmates leaking emails. You mean to tell me that there can't be journalists who find every single person who's ever worked for Kamala and none of them have anything to say? None of them have maybe have had a bad enough experience they might actually dump on her now? And I don't believe it.
Charlie, this is just a reminder that we have to do the work to win in the key target states. Go to tpaction.com to get involved. That's tpaction.com/chase to sign up for updates on our ballot chasing initiatives. We have a big initiative that we're rolling out this month, committing everyone to chase. Help us chase just 100 votes. That's 10 days of hard work, mainly over weekends, that we need everyone's help. That's tpaction.com/chase. You can get a job with us at tpaction.com/careers. Or download our application and start knocking doors right away.
Blake, final thoughts.
She's fake. I refuse to believe that we are so far gone that everyone is just going
play
to fall
that song again
for the Kamala spell. She's fake. She is bad. She's a crappy boss. She has failed her way upward every step of her life. I do not think that the United States is ready to have a Peter Principle president. We are not going to promote this non-entity into the chair that George Washington's butt sat in. Ugh.
She's also a communist.
And that too. Yeah, you know, she's just bad.
Minor details. All right, check it out. Thought Crime every Thursday. Thanks, guys, so much. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Till then, keep committing thought crimes. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.